You're listening to the Brown Girl Podcast, a new show discussing various cultural and mainstream topics that impact our community from the perspectives of South Asian women. The show also aims to highlight South Asian women creators, business owners, and pioneers who are paving the way for future generations. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever your podcasts are found. If you're on Instagram, give us a follow at thebrowngirl_podcast to stay up to date on new releases and stay engaged with our community. Thanks for tuning in. Hey guys, welcome to the Brown Girl Podcast. My name is Julie. I am the host of this show. Today is episode 17. We are now releasing episodes every 2 weeks. If you haven't listened to our last episode 16, make sure you give that a listen. It's a super fascinating story where we interviewed Sana Akand, who I discovered through TikTok. Sana comes from a South Asian background. She's a New Yorker, and she and her husband are married and in love, but have chosen to live in separate New York City apartments. She shares in this episode why it works for them and their love story. I love hearing stories of people who are fearlessly living their own lives, making up their own rules, and going against the grain. And so I found her story to be really inspiring and empowering, and I'm so glad she was willing to come on and share that part of her life. So be sure to check that out if you haven't already. For today's episode, we're doing something a little different, and we have a male on the show. So when I first started this podcast, I wanted it to be a place to amplify the voices and stories of South Asian women in particular. And while that still will remain the case going forward, I think there are some conversations and topics where it is relevant to have the opposite sex perspective. And particularly, that was some of the feedback I got when we did a few of the dating and relationship episodes. So my friend Tina Luke and I recorded episodes 12 and 13 together. So bookmark those so you can listen later if you haven't. But in those episodes, we talked about dating in our 30s, cultural pressures and expectations. We did a whole Q&A where we answered questions submitted by listeners about dating or their dating dilemmas. And it was a really popular topic and series. And again, some of the feedback was it'd be good to also have a male perspective. I do agree with that. And so that's something we'll try to take into account more going forward. So for today, we have a fun conversation with my friend Danny Matam. Have a bit of a unique story on how I met Danny. Danny and I actually met on Instagram. So I have a fitness and nutrition Instagram account, and it's kind of interesting when you have a social media or you're part of some online community that's centered around a particular niche, whether it's for a business or you're a content creator in a particular space or a gamer or whatever it is. It's really common to build little communities and friendships through these virtual platforms, but most of the time, those friendships kind of stay in that virtual world. But Danny's probably the one social media friend who's also become my friend in real life as well. We catch up on the phone every so often. We ask each other for advice. We've met in real life because one of us was traveling through the other person's cities. And I think that's one of the awesome parts of social media these days is that it can be a funnel to build friendships and connections that otherwise wouldn't have existed. Anyways, so I thought Danny would be a great guest to have on the show today. He's taken a bit more of an unconventional approach on life and career. He's big on personal development, and he is definitely someone who lives life on his own terms and makes up his own rules. So a little bit about Danny. He is 29 years old. He was born and raised in Miami, Florida, went to college at the University of Chicago, where he studied economics. After graduating in 2016, he moved to New York City, where he worked in investment banking for 2 years. Then in 2018, he moved back home to Miami, Florida to work at a private equity firm. He did that until February 2021, when on his 28th birthday, he decided to leave his career to become a full-time YouTuber and now day trader. In this episode, we talk about his career, some of the challenges he's faced as an entrepreneur, his personal development routines, his views on dating apps, his relationship experiences, and advice he has for people seeking love. I'd say the bulk of this episode is centered around dating and relationships and personal development. So a few points of clarification. I know we have new listeners and not everyone comes from South Asian backgrounds, but you will hear Danny reference himself as being, quote, Malayali Christian, end quote, which means his ethnic roots originate from a state in the southern part of India called Kerala, which is also where I'm from. Kerala is a minority Christian state, and people from Kerala can be referred to as a Malayali because Malayalam is the language spoken in Kerala. Just a little background on that, if that confuses anyone later on. I hope you guys enjoy this episode.
Hey, Danny, it's nice to have you on the show. Thank you for being here.
No problem. Happy to be on the show.
Yeah, we've talked about doing this for some time. So give us a quick rundown in your own words, who you are, you know, what you do, where you grew up, and how you got to where you're at now.
Yeah, so my name's Danny. I live in Miami right now. I'm currently a day trader, so I basically day trade futures contracts right now. But yeah, I was born and raised in Miami to immigrant parents. I have one older brother, and yeah, grew up here my whole life with a pretty tight-knit group of Malayali friends, and you know, grew up playing sports and being a boisterous child. And then, yeah, when I realized I wasn't going to the NFL, I played football for a long time. I ended up just wanting to play sports at a good academic school. My parents were really big on like education and stuff growing up. So ended up at the University of Chicago, which is where I went to college. And I studied economics there. And, you know, when I got there, I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do, but knew I wanted to do something in kind of business, finance, you know, wanted to get a 4-year degree and get out ASAP. I wasn't a huge fan of school. So anyway, I got there. A lot of my teammates were getting into finance. So long story short, I ended up working on Wall Street for about 5 years. I worked in investment banking in New York for 2 years and then worked at two private equity firms down in South Florida for 3 years. Ended up kind of quitting my job on my 28th birthday to kind of be an entrepreneur, which I'm sure we'll get into later in the show. So that's just like the quick rundown on me.
Mm-hmm. So you went to University of Chicago, so you're obviously very smart. And then you spent a couple years, you know, the corporate route, investment banking, private equity, and then you said you quit on your 28th birthday. And so you took part in the, quote, great resignation. So talk to us about that decision. And you became like a full-time YouTuber after that. So talk to us about that decision. What led to that?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, to be honest, this is kind of the last place I thought I'd be by 29 years old. The last thing I thought I'd be doing. But there were a few catalysts that kind of got me to this moment. So in 2020, obviously, the pandemic started. And I realized a few things. After working on Wall Street for kind of 5 years, you know, I used to be very fit and athletic growing up. I had gained a ton of weight. So I was like really out of shape. So now that I was able to work from home, I wasn't commuting to work. Deal flow in private equity had slowed down. I had a lot of time to work out. Needed to find a way to stay busy. So I was like working out like twice a day from like March 2020 to July 2020. And I was just sharing like fitness content on Instagram for fun. And that made me realize like I like making content that like is entertaining, inspires people, motivates people. And people said they enjoyed my fitness content and enjoyed kind of watching my progression. Two, you know, in 2020 when the stock market crashed and after working for 5 years, I finally had a decent amount of money saved up. I started investing heavily in the stock market for the first time and realized I kind of enjoy investing in stocks more than I enjoyed investing in private companies. I think it was just better for kind of my emotions and like the daily fluctuations got my juices stirring and stuff like that. And it went pretty well in 2020. And then this was probably the biggest catalyst of all. Like I said, it was the first time I could work remotely and I got tired of living at home, staying in Miami. So I just booked a one-way flight to Europe, ended up in Croatia for a good 5.5 weeks and ended up having like, it was an incredible 5.5 weeks, just kite surfing, doing fun things every day. And coming back from that, when I had to come back from that trip is my boss has called me and said, hey, we're opening up the office in September of 2020. You need to come back. I was like really bummed and really sad. And I remember being there the first day in my cubicle, just thinking, this can't be it for you. Like, you can't be here for another 5 years. And keep in mind, I had just got promoted at that firm. I loved the team. The work was pretty interesting. I liked it. But once you kind of experience a different level of freedom and flexibility, I just knew I couldn't be in that cubicle. And it was in Boca Raton. So I told myself, all right, at some point in the next year, you're quitting your job. You're finding a way to work for yourself. And that was my only intention. And then what happened is my cousin, he had moved here from India when he was like 15. He started investing in the stock market and he would watch a lot of YouTube videos to get his stock and investing news and information. So one day he just suggested, hey, why don't you try starting like a finance, stock and investing YouTube channel? So in November of 2020, I posted my first video and initially they were like general finance videos. But I remember in December of 2020, I started posting individual stock videos and I had one that got like 1300 or 1500 views. And then I knew, okay, I got to keep making these. And then I just started churning out stock videos like one to two a day. And basically by February of 2021, which was my 28th birthday, I had grown to like 10,000 subscribers. And based on the rate of growth of the channel, my Patreon, basically I thought by the end of 2021, I could be a big time YouTuber. So I just made the decision to quit my job on my 28th birthday to focus on that. So that's kind of how I became a YouTuber. And YouTube was nice because I worked for myself. I could work from make videos from anywhere in the world. You know, I didn't really have a boss or a schedule that I needed to stick to kind of. So that was how I ended up starting the channel and how I ended up quitting my job to focus on YouTube.
We've probably all had similar feelings at some point, whether it was before the pandemic or after, you know, where after you start your career a few years in, you're like, kind of think to yourself, like, man, is this what the next X number of years of my life are going to look like? And I think the pandemic specifically for a lot of people, like what you just said, it gave them that taste of what freedom and flexibility could feel like. And that left a lot of people hungry for more, you know, and naturally people are reevaluating their life priorities, how they want to spend their time and maximize their lives. So with respect to your YouTube channel, so when you decided to become a full-time YouTuber, you had grown your YouTube to how many subscribers did you say?
About 19,500.
Okay, so you'd grown your YouTube to about 20,000 subscribers, almost. Huge accomplishment and, you know, testament to the fact that you were creating the kind of content that people wanted to see and learn from. And then your YouTube channel got shut down by YouTube. So What was going through that like? Because I would imagine that was a real, you know, emotional travesty, because at that point, YouTube is your full-time job, like you were monetizing off of it. So what was going through that challenge like?
Yeah. We were getting ad revenue. We had just gotten our first sponsorship in like September or October of 2021. So, and a big goal of both my cousin and myself is he had graduated college and decided to work with me full time on YouTube as well for a year or so, was to grow that channel to 50 or 75,000 subscribers. That was our 2022 goal. And, you know, YouTube was tough. I guess I probably should add this color. Like once I quit my job, I found myself, I lost a little bit of discipline. So I wasn't posting as consistently on YouTube. And when the stock market crashed in 2021, views and subscriber growth and ad revenue all slowed down. So that all kind of put me in a pretty tough mental state because it was literally the week after I quit my job that all of this happened. So 2021 ended up being, I would say it wasn't as good of a year as it could have been from a YouTube standpoint. Like if I had cranked the entire year, like I had those first 3 months, the channel probably would have ended 2021. With like 40 or 50,000 subscribers, but I didn't do that. So coming into this year, a big goal of mine was to get focused, be disciplined, and grow it to 75,000 subs, hopefully. But what happened was literally the third week of January, I had just done a live stream. And an hour later, I got a message saying that we violated some community guideline or something, and our channel was taken down. And we appealed it, but you know, we hadn't heard, we haven't gotten the channel back. But I'll say, you know, when it went away, that really hurt because it stung. But if I'm being honest, I was starting to realize that I didn't enjoy making stock videos. And I didn't want to do that the rest of my life, but I knew I enjoyed making content. So I would say, though, that the way it affected me more was I lost sight of like what is going to be my mission and purpose for 2022. Right. And that had a more detrimental impact on me over the last kind of 3-4 months than actually losing the channel itself did. But also, I think, you know, I always keep a positive mindset. And I really believe that everything that happens to you really happens for a reason. Right. And funny story, a week before the channel had just gotten taken down, like I had just gone to like a 1-week meditation retreat. So it was really hard for me to believe like the week I get back from this meditation retreat, like my YouTube channel that I had worked so hard on got taken away, right? Like, so I think it helped me realize that, okay, this happened for a reason. YouTube maybe just wasn't part of the plan this year. Maybe you're meant to go in a different direction. So I'm still trying to figure out that direction. And sometimes I, you know, think I should go appeal it again. Or at one point I was even thinking about flying to San Francisco and just standing outside of YouTube headquarters, like trying to get a meeting with the people in charge of kind of YouTube copyright stuff. But, I've just, you know, once the channel got taken down, I ended up focusing on day trading and it went pretty well in February and made me realize like, okay, you were spending all this time and energy on YouTube, even though it makes up like a fraction of your income now. Like it was maybe like 10% of my monthly income. Most of the money I make comes from investing in day trading. So I was spending 90% of my time on YouTube, even though I only got 10% of my income from there. And
this is after the YouTube was shut, your original shutdown?
This is the entire year, the last year. Like I should have been focused on being the best investor I could be. And when I have time, make YouTube videos or share YouTube videos. But instead I was focused on, let me grow this YouTube channel as big as I can. And I started neglecting some of my investments and not putting as much time into learning how to become a better day trader than I should have, which actually resulted in me losing, you know, quite a bit of money in the stock market last year, end of last year, early this year. So once the channel went away, the only thing I really had to focus on was day trading. And in February, my first month being a full-time day trader, which was never part of the plan when I quit my job, you know, it went better than expected and made me realize, okay, maybe in the near term, this is what you should focus on and figure out.
Yeah. Do you feel like the YouTube channel being shut down was kind of the impetus to propelling you into that next phase? Like,
yeah, you know, I think so. You know,
futures trading or day trading?
Yeah, I think so. You know, when... The funny thing is, like I said, everything happens for a reason. The only reason I learned about futures trading in the first place, specifically the strategy that I do, which is selling options on futures contracts, was from one of my old YouTube subscribers. And he only started watching my content like last October or November after I had, I think, gotten to like 15,000+ subscribers. So, you know, if I never started the YouTube channel and never grew it to where I grew it, I probably never would have got to that point where I learned about this strategy on selling options on futures contracts, which I learned from a subscriber. So everything happens for a reason. Sometimes I wish I still had it, right? When you have something that gets taken away, then you learn to appreciate it. So because I do know deep down, part of me wants to make content and share things with the world, whether it's how to become wealthier or a personal development content or fitness content, but there's a time and a place for everything. And I just know at this juncture, like I need to master this futures trading thing because it is very risky and you could lose a lot of money. So once I feel like I've gotten really good at it, I do want to get back into content creation and maybe even I do have another YouTube channel, but I'm not really focused on it right now.
Yeah. I think that's a good reminder, you know, when you're in the thick of what feels like a low point is that in the moment, it can be really hard to see like how this can be a good thing. But oftentimes it's those low points that kind of force you to, you know, really face that challenge head on and perhaps take on new things and come out stronger. And for you, you have the perspective now of like, okay, maybe that was what needed to happen in order to get you to focus on the next thing. Just having that kind of growth mindset is so pivotal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it helped me identify flaws I had in myself too, because when the channel went away, I found myself trying to find comfort and stability in other things, like women and relationships or trips and travel. Mm-hmm. And it made me realize that, you know, I had some things I needed to work on too, personally.
Yeah. Well, that segues really nicely into the next thing. So women in relationships. You know, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show was because when we did the dating and relationship series, one of the feedback we got was it would be good to have a male perspective. And you were the first person that came to mind because you are someone who focuses a lot on personal growth and personal development and, in you know, saying yes to different opportunities that will allow you to just elevate, you know, your mindset. So talk to us about some of your personal development routines and why you feel so strongly about personal development.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So I probably started focusing more on personal development towards the end of 2018, early 2019. And I guess I should talk about what drove all of this, right? I already mentioned that when I started working as an investment banker in 2016, I had gained like 40 pounds in the first year. So got into like the worst shape of my life. And, but fast forward to 2018, 2019, you know, at this point, I'm what I consider extremely overweight. I was in a long distance relationship that I wasn't happy in, and I wasn't financially where I wanted to be. And to be honest, I hated my job, which was the opposite of what I expected, because every year I was making more money. The hours were getting better. The work was more interesting. I would say one of my firms in 2018 was a tough work environment. But overall, you would think like life, this was like supposed to be the dream when I was 18. Like, yo, you work in investment banking, grind it out for 2 years, go get an awesome private equity job and grind your way to partner and become a multimillionaire by 35. And I just found myself just not getting happier, even though like I was going on that track. So I would say the first thing I did was I read this book in April of 2019 called The Miracle Morning, written by Hal Elrod. And basically, to summarize, he had a great life. He went through some traumatic events, lost all his money, his health, his girlfriend, and he was in like, I think he was borderline suicidal. And he started studying very successful people and identifying what habits do they do regularly. And he said, okay, what if I, he found that they all did some habits in common. And he said, what if I do all of these every single day, first thing in the morning? And so he tried that for 6 months, and within 6 months, his life had drastically transformed. So these six habits are, his acronym is SAVERS. The S stands for silence or meditation. The A stands for affirmations. The V stands for visualization. The E stands for exercise. The R stands for reading. And the S stands for scribing or journaling. So I thought that was a very interesting book. And I slowly started, or I tried to incorporate as many of those habits as possible. I would say in 2019, the one I was really focused on was getting back into shape. So I was trying to exercise more. And I would say I tried reading every day a little bit, even if it was just 10 minutes, right? And then at the end of 2019, I got a free ticket to this Tony Robbins Unleash the Power Within seminar. Ended up going to the 3-day workshop retreat in Miami. And while I was there, I didn't really think much of it, but right after that retreat, I just felt like something clicked within me and I felt like a different person. I was just working really hard on like, well, trying to acquire a multifamily property kind of towards the end of 2019, early 2020. But then what happened was 2020 came around and I said, all right, this is going to be the best year of my life. So then I started working out even harder. I kept reading almost every day and I started saying affirmations pretty regularly and, you know, just trying to cut out certain of my bad habits and trying to wake up earlier and hit the gym at 5, which I started doing. And so 2020 was like a really good year, especially the first 6 months. And those habits really gave me a lot of momentum going into COVID, where now I had more time to really focus on being the best version of myself. So that's just kind of how I got into personal development. And over the last 2 years, I would say I've tried to maintain as many of those habits as possible, but at the same time, I've had my fair share of setbacks because I've let distractions kind of get in the way sometimes of, and just I lost focus and sight of sometimes the person I wanted to become and the things I wanted to accomplish. But this year, you know, I'm really trying to focus on incorporating all of those habits daily if I can.
Yeah. I mean, I think that happens to the best of us, right? Like we all have those days where things just don't go as planned or what have you. But the most important thing is just getting back up the next day. All of what you said kind of reminded me of this one quote that I love. I forget who it's from, but it's something along the lines of your success is rooted in your daily routine. Like it's all those like small, tiny habits that add up that, you know, make you 1% better each day. And I'm a huge believer that most personal development routines should not have a budget. Like there's always going to be an ROI on self-improvement and development. And, you know, if there's like a book that you want that will allow you to learn something valuable that can help improve yourself, like go get it. Don't even think twice about it, you know, because that in itself is going to pay dividends to your future, whether it's a hard skill set that you're learning or like a mindset shift that's now giving you confidence to, you know, pursue the next thing in your life.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I've definitely spent my fair share of money on personal development courses, books, seminars. So I definitely agree with you on that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's make a hard pivot into dating, your dating life. So tell us, are you single? Are you looking? Are you in a relationship? What's the deal?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I'm single right now. I've been single since the summer of 2019. Am I looking? That's a tough question. I think the way I would phrase it is like, would I date an amazing girl, my dream girl, and get in a relationship if I like met her or we just happened to run into each other? Like, absolutely, I would be open to it. I'm pretty sure. But am I actively going out there right now, like really trying to find her? I wouldn't say I'm spending like focusing too much on that. I have kind of, you know, gone on dates and gotten to know women over the last kind of 3 years or so. Mm-hmm. I would say in the earlier part of those 3 years, like I didn't really go in with the mindset I was looking for a relationship, or anything serious. You know, in the last year or so though, I definitely think I've gotten more open to the idea of like getting into a relationship that has the potential to, you know, be serious long-term. It's just, you got to meet the right person. And I think given that I just started kind of this entrepreneurial kind of journey, it's just kind of tough sometimes to be able to focus on dating as much as I'd like to. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I think self-awareness around that is super important. So what was your longest relationship? Why didn't those relationships work? And what did you learn from them?
Yeah, for sure. So I was in three longer relationships from like the ages of 18 to 26. And that in and of itself was probably a mistake, but I didn't really know better at the time. But, you know, the last and longest one lasted almost 3.5 years. And the first one, which is when I was kind of 18 to 20, that lasted about 2 years. So just to give you kind of, you know, I guess why they ended, you know, the first one, I just got to college. I had never really dated a girl. So I ended up dating the first girl kind of I started spending time with, hooking up with. And, you know, I ended up staying with her. I ended up staying together with her for a while, even though I knew she wasn't right for me long term. And to be honest, I tried ending it multiple times. But every time I did, and not to blame anyone, she would, you know, she would cry, guilt trip me. And, you know, I ended up just basically staying in that longer than I should have. And that was definitely a learning lesson that I'll get into.
Mm-hmm. And that then was your first relationship?
That was my first relationship. So I was like 18 to 20 years old, basically almost 21. Then my last one, you know, I got back to college for my senior year. I had just gotten out of my second relationship like 4 or 5 months prior. And I said I wasn't going to date anyone for a long time because I knew I was moving to New York City after graduation. But I got back to campus and I met this awesome girl who checked a lot of what I thought were my boxes at the time. So I ended up wanting to continue getting to know her. And, you know, we were in the same place for a year and it was great. But then I moved to New York. She was still in school in Chicago. So we ended up doing long distance for another 2.5 years. After that, and I would say it ended mostly because we just couldn't agree on where to live, you know, so it ended because of distance. But I think we both also started realizing we just wanted different things out of life. Mm-hmm. And I also personally felt like I just hadn't become the man I knew I was capable of becoming, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like that relationship and the amount of time and energy I was spending to keep it going was allowing me to turn into that man. So I ended up breaking up with that girl the summer of 2019. We're still on good terms and stuff. We don't talk or anything, but I think we both realize now, looking back, like it was definitely the right decision. And I know a lot of the things I've accomplished, the places I've gone, even starting a YouTube channel, probably wouldn't have happened if I stayed in that relationship.
Yeah.
I think the most important lesson I learned is like, well, now I personally believe that people, but especially young men, shouldn't get into relationships. Like, mm-hmm. I think this is what I tell all my cousins, little cousins. I say, don't get into a relationship until you have 6 figures in the bank and you're making 6 figures a year. Amen. That's what I tell them. So most 25-year-olds and younger don't have those boxes checked out. But, you know, I still accomplished a decent amount in college and got great jobs and internships, despite basically being a delinquent student and spending all this time with my first girlfriend. And looking back, I just wonder, like, what if you had that discipline and focus that you had later in life and you applied that in college? Who could you have become? What could you have accomplished? What jobs could you have got? So I do wish the first time I tried ending that relationship, I actually ended it.
Yeah.
But I think I just, you know, sometimes in relationships, especially in the first one, you get codependent on the other person. And because it was such a small campus, me and her would always run into each other, you know. So that's kind of why it took so long to kind of get out of that relationship. But I would say, you know, people need to focus on, especially in their early 20s, on their career, their education, their money. That's what they should be focusing on. So that's one lesson I learned.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big believer that everyone needs to just spend a few years living your life and just kind of, you know, getting things out of your system, like making some mistakes, learning, traveling, growing. Like, you need a few years to just do you. Because if you never get that chance, chances are it's going to catch up to you in some way. And I remember, like, my first boyfriend in high school. Well, it started in high school and then it went into college. And it was, you know, also a relationship that just kind of drug on for longer than it probably needed to. And there was nothing wrong with him. But I think part of why it drug on longer was because I was just young and I just felt really guilty about the idea of, like, breaking up with someone. But I ultimately just felt like, I mean, I just had so much life to live and I just knew I needed to, you know, explore the world and just do my own thing. And I knew that, like, being in a relationship, like a serious relationship that young, I was probably like 20, 21 years old at the time, was not going to let me do that. And I also didn't want to build up resentment over time of not being able to do those things and become, you know, the best version of myself and the woman that, like, I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that 100%. And a lot of my friends who've been dating girls since they were 25, they ended up marrying them. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of married guys under the age of 30 tell me to take my time.
Yeah.
Live life.
Yeah.
See, a lot of them say they're living vicariously through me, you know? So sometimes that makes me realize, okay, take your time, make sure you're 100% ready before you jump into something. Because I'm not going to lie, like, I'm 29. Yeah, there is nice things about a relationship and companionship and, like, knowing someone cares about you, right? So,
yeah.
But at the same time, you got to make sure it's the right person, because, you know, I thought, like, and sometimes it's not also about the right person. It's about logistics and timing, right? Like, yeah. One thing I know from doing long distance in two of my relationships is, like, if you do that, like, another lesson I learned is you got to have a plan, an end date for your long distance, because you can't just indefinitely be in a long distance relationship. And what me and my ex would keep doing was every time the topic came up or we got in a little argument because I didn't want to move for her, she didn't want to move for me, we would just say, okay, well, we don't have to talk about that now because we're not at that juncture, right? And we just kept pushing it off and off and off until it got to the point where, you know, we were pretty fed up of each other, but that one of us just had to rip the Band-Aid off the wound and say, hey, this isn't going to work for us.
Mm-hmm. So I had polled a few people who listen to the pod regularly on what kind of questions they wanted to hear from you, like a male perspective. And a handful of people wanted to hear you talk about what kind of pressure you feel from your family around marriage, being a male who is 29, almost nearing 30. What's that been like for you?
Yeah, it's so I would say my parents aren't the typical like Malayali parents. They're pretty open-minded and relatively liberal. And they know me very well. So I would say I don't get too much pressure from my parents. Obviously, they would love for me to like find an amazing girl and settle down right now. And I have like every couple months they might drop in a joking tone like, Danny, think you need to start looking, or think it's time to settle down. But I think they know the importance of just finding the right person and being with the right person. And they themselves, they weren't an arranged marriage. They were like a love marriage. So they have a great relationship with each other. And, you know, they want me and my brother to be happy. My brother got married at 27. He's been married for almost over three years now. So there's not as much pressure from them. My aunts, though, a couple of them moved here from India like 5-6 years ago. So they're much more traditional. And, you know, most people are like, oh, you're 30, you're old. So there are some people are of that mindset. And I know that I'm not the only one who hears that in the Indian community. You're 30, like you got to get married. So I would say I hear it more from them, but it's nothing too crazy. I have older cousins who aren't married, right? So they still got, you know, technically I can always say they got to get married before I need to get married. But
yeah,
I would say a lot of the pressure I felt over the last 2 years was kind of self-imposed and maybe even coming from a slightly unhealthy place. So I would say there are three points I'd elaborate on that, right? I think when I was 18, which the last decade went by so fast, if someone asked me, Danny, where are you going to be at 29, right? I'm sitting here thinking, oh, that's a long way away. I'm going to be wealthy. I'm going to be dating my dream girl, like the love of my life, or already engaged to her. And maybe like 2 years away from having kids, right? That's what I would have said at 18 about the 29-year-old Danny. And now that I'm here and I'm like, oh, damn, you're pretty far away from that reality.
Yeah.
So that put a lot of pressure on myself. And then second, a lot of my best friends got married last year. So they were all kind of 29 or 30 when they got married. So just going to like, I think I went to like 9 weddings in the last year. And just seeing all of these guys my age get married put pressure on me, especially because me and my best friends would talk as kids growing up, all like, let's all get married at the same time so that we have kids at the same time and our kids are best friends. Like, we're all best friends, right? So they all got married so quickly. And once I started processing that, I started realizing that that reality, that dream we talked about, probably might happen for them and their kids, but it's not going to happen for me and my kids, like, you know, that whole thing about growing up together and being best friends. So that was a little bit of a tough pill to swallow for a good couple months there. But, you know, I'd rather not rush the process and end up with the wrong person.
Yeah,
there have been plenty of girls who've been interested in me. I just didn't feel that strongly about them. And I think the last thing I would say is, I think I already talked about like just knowing who you are and being happy by yourself and not relying on external people and influences to make you happy. So what I realized over the last couple of years as I've gone through my ups and downs through business and money and health is I would always, sometimes these girls I would talk to, I would always try to find some comfort and stability in them, right? Or in the idea of a relationship. Because even if everything in my life is so volatile, especially when you're a day trader, like it can be crazy, having a nice stable relationship is nice. So what I realized is I would tend to, if there was a girl I liked or was intimate with at some point, mm-hmm. I would end up catching feelings for her really quickly. And I realized, and wanting to get in a relationship with her. And like, I realized that it shouldn't really be like that. Like, you should make sure it's the right person. Mm-hmm. You're in a good spot and you're actually ready before you jump into something. So I would say that pressure, the pressure, like I would try to use a relationship as like a coping mechanism and a way to get comfort when things, other areas in my life aren't going as smoothly as sometimes I hope they did.
Yeah. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with all of those points, you know, like wait to find the right person that you truly feel is the right person for you deep down. Make sure you're in the right mindset. You know, at the end of the day, like a lifetime is a long time. Like in the grand scheme of things, who cares if you get married at 31 versus 33? You're going to be with this person for the rest of your life, or so we say.
Exactly.
So you mentioned dream girl. So what is your dream girl? What is this quote criteria or boxes? You mentioned boxes a little while ago. What's the criteria that you're attracted to?
Yeah. So look, I wouldn't consider myself a superficial guy, but I'll just get this one out of the way. Like I need to be physically attracted to the girl.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair.
So that's assuming that that box is checked, right? Then I kind of know after talking to a lot of girls, being in relationships, and my three girlfriends from 18 to 26, they were not Indian. They were white and one was Hispanic. So I know that at this moment in time, like I personally would like to date an Indian girl. Specifically, ideally a Malayali Christian girl, right? Because I'm a South Malayali Christian guy. And I think a lot of that stems from, I just feel like when you share somewhat of a similar upbringing and culture as a person, you can definitely connect and bond over that, right? And then I just kind of, and I know Indians aren't the only culture with this, but like I love how from the weddings I've seen and how in-laws interact with each other, I just liked that dynamic a lot. And I love like the big family dynamic, which I have a pretty big family. And I just wanted to be with someone who understands and shares that. And I kind of wanted to bring my kids up in that kind of culture too. So I would say like, that's why I would want, ideally like to date a Malayali Christian girl. Third, you know, I think a lot of people have this, but I want a person with good morals and values. Okay. That's basic. What is that? That's obvious. What does that mean? You know, but I think I just mean like a girl who's loyal, honest, you know, she's kind and treats everyone with like respect. And she doesn't act like she's better than anyone. Mm-hmm. You would think like, oh, that's not too hard to find. But I find that it's not not everyone shares that character trait. Fourth, you know, look, I'm really into working out and like taking care of my physical health. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I was raised like or I was an athlete my whole life. Mm-hmm. And I know what it's like to be really out of shape and I know what it's like to be really in shape. And I like the latter. So I just would like a girl who's really into fitness and working out. It doesn't have to necessarily be lifting weights like 6 days a week, but ideally she's active, which would also help with the first thing about physical attraction. Okay, so a couple more. Look, I went to the University of Chicago. I don't particularly consider myself super smart, but I would like a woman who's intelligent and ideally successful. Now, success used to mean money for me. Now I don't care as much about how much money a woman makes. Mm-hmm. You know, I always had that, like, I want a girl who makes at least 150 because then I know she can take care of herself and she's not necessarily into me for the wrong reasons. Now I don't care as much about how much she makes, but as long as I know she's smart and, you know, has a career, that's good enough for me. Mm-hmm. Next, you know, these are probably a little less important. But ideally, she has a big family and good relationships with her family. Next, like I have a lot of interesting hobbies and activities that I do, snowboarding, kite surfing. So, you know, she doesn't have to do all these type of things, but ideally she would like, I remember asking a girl I was talking to a couple months ago, the first time I talked to her, and I was like, what do you do for fun? And she was like, I don't know. And I was just like, I mean, I had no intentions of talking to her ever again after that call. She was persistent. So we ended up talking and hanging out. But like, I need a girl who like does something for fun, right? Like when you're free. I guess the last two things are like, she wants kids because I want kids one day.
Okay.
So it's like a yes or no thing, I guess. And then, you know, because I'm into personal development, self-growth, she doesn't have to be as into everything I do, but as long as she can understand and respect it and like, you know, reads personal development books or just tries to do something to become a better person. that's good enough for me. So I don't expect everyone to like go to 1 week meditation retreats and things like that.
Okay. All right. So, okay. So a couple points. I think the physical attraction thing, I totally get it. I think most of us get it. I think physical attraction is important. You know, I think especially in the world of app dating, when you're basing your decision on a few photos over the course of a few split seconds, you know, of course you're making a judgment based upon largely upon physical attraction. I also believe that it is possible to fall in love with someone's personality, and that in turn might make them more physically attractive as a person. Well, to some degree, to some extent, because I feel like that's happened to me in the past where maybe I met someone, you know, at work or someplace that's not an online dating app. Where I met someone who I physically wasn't super attracted to, but then I gave it a chance and got to know them personally. And that kind of changed the physical attraction point. I think that only applies to a certain extent. Like, I think you have to be attracted to them enough is I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think love and attraction are two separate things. And while it's great when they go together, I think it's possible for the physical attraction to grow if you start falling in love with the person that they are and how they treat you and how they make you feel to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think it's, I can't say that that would happen for me. Okay. I do think men are in general more, I think they place more emphasis on physical attraction, at least in, I think. Mm-hmm. I personally, if I didn't find a girl physically attractive,
okay,
probably wouldn't ever view her in that light of like, this could turn into a relationship or something intimate. You know, I have quite a few friends who are just women who are just friends who, you know, I'm sure they, I mean, some of them would want to be more than friends, but just the physical attraction just isn't there that, even though some of them have amazing personalities and like, I think would be great moms and like wives and like they have good careers and stuff. It's just, if for me personally, if that physical attraction isn't there, it's just, I don't want to jump into something. What, because I do believe that there is a girl out there who, you know, meets kind of the physical attraction test and could make me feel the same way.
Yeah. And I don't think anybody should settle for something that's important to them. So I get it.
Yeah.
As far as like your desire for marrying another Malayali Christian girl, like, you mentioned your previous relationships were not with Malayali girls, and you kind of already stated like why you have that strong preference or desire for it. Do you get pressure from your parents to marry within the culture, or are they pretty open-minded about it?
So they're pretty open-minded. My brother's married to a Caucasian girl.
Okay.
And like all of my exes, like, well, two of them met my mom. One of them was at my brother's wedding with her whole family. So they're super open. But I do feel like, I do know deep down, like, I think they would prefer it if I dated like an Indian girl or a Malayali girl too, ideally. I remember telling my dad once, like a couple months ago or last year, like, Dad, I just want you to know, like, I'm only dating like a Malayali Christian girl. And like, my dad was raised Kana until he married my mom. So I was like, oh, and ideally she's Kana too. And I remember my dad was just like so giddy, like a kid. And like when my mom came home from work, he's like, Thangamma, did you hear? Danny wants to date an Indian girl and he wants her to be Kana. And I was like, you know, so I could kind of tell, like, I know they would like it, but they would never force it or pressure me to like date a person that, you know, wasn't right for me.
Yeah. And kind of going back to the settling point, I think the only thing I wanted to say on that with respect to like marrying within the culture is, I think it's, you know, obviously totally fine to have a preference of marrying within your culture. Like, that totally makes sense. I have similar preferences. I know you and I have talked about this before, but I think a lot of times people get married for the wrong reasons, one of which is allowing the cultural factor to overpower like other values or other criteria that are important to you, I think it's important that you have a much stronger connection and admiration for the person that you're with beyond them just meeting like a cultural checkbox.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I was even thinking about this today because this girl came up on my Instagram feed who I kind of have, well, I kind of have a crush on her, and she's not Indian. She's Portuguese. And I was like, Danny, if you and this girl lived in the same place and a relationship was feasible, like, would you say no, assuming she like checked all the boxes? Like, would you really not pursue it or entertain the idea of like a relationship with this girl? And I was like, probably not. Like, you know?
Like, wait, so you would or you would not?
No, I probably would entertain the idea of a relationship. Yeah. I would go on a date with her, see what the vibe was.
Yeah.
Because like she could be an amazing person, right? And if she checks all the boxes and you guys are super compatible, like, look, I don't believe that there's just one perfect person out there for you.
Mm-hmm.
But, I really asked myself that. And it's like, you could really want something, but, you know, I don't know. Like, if I can't find the right Indian girl, I'm not going to pass up an amazing like girl just because she's not Indian, you know?
Yes. I feel like your, quote, dream girl, you know, or quote, dream guy is a personality. And it should be someone that you deeply admire and respect as a person. And that needs to be the case irrespective of whether they are from your culture or not. What has been your experience like on the dating apps? Are you on the dating apps? And what's that been like for you?
Yeah. Honestly, the only dating app I've really consistently used, probably only over the last like year or year and a half, actually only consistently over like probably this year, was Dilmil, you know, the Indian dating app. Like Tinder, Bumble, Hinge, like I don't really, never really use those. So I've been on Dilmil and it's all right. I was never a fan of dating apps to start, to be honest, just because I feel like it's so hard to get to know a person through mm-hmm. like a profile. I mean, I personally feel like Instagram is kind of a dating app too, because I've met so many women off Instagram. And it allows you to get to know a person just as well as a dating app, in my opinion. But, you know, overall, I would say, like, look, they serve their purpose. And, you know, I've definitely, like, matched with girls, like Malayali girls, Indian girls from, like, all over the country, and gotten to know some girls that are interesting. It's just, you know, at least with Dilmil, when you don't live in the same place, you got to definitely invest some time, energy, and money if there's someone you've been talking to and you want to actually get to know them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to keep in mind. And then it just, you know, like I said, it's hard to get to know somebody well off of their profile, right? Which is why, at least I personally like Instagram better, because you can kind of see, get to know them better based on their pictures or videos or what they post on their story. But Dilmil's fine.
What do you think are the don'ts that you see on dating app profiles? Like if you had to think about do's and don'ts of dating apps, like what are the things that kind of, quote, turn you off in girls' dating profiles?
Yeah, for sure. So the first thing is like, please have more than one picture, right? And please make it a clear photo. Mm-hmm. And ideally you'd have pictures doing things that show your personality.
Yeah.
Your interests, your hobbies.
Yeah.
Right? Like some girls only have one picture, or some girls have multiple pictures, but they're all selfies, right? Or just them in a dress or something, right? And I would prefer if like your pictures tell me something about you, your life, the way you live it, etc. So that's one thing. Two, I would say if you could write a bio, or I think with Dilmil and some other dating apps, you can like select prompts and answer the prompts. Like you should do it, because that gives me more information about you as a person. Your bio tells me something about you. The prompts you select and your answers to those prompts tell me something about you, right? So it's hard enough just judging someone off of some photos. If you don't like give any information about yourself, it's even harder to get to know somebody. But then again, like some guys would just, I know a lot of guys who just swipe right on every girl And I know guys who just don't even read the questions or the bios. And if like the girl's pretty, they'll swipe right. They're not attracted to her, they'll swipe left. But I maybe actually put more time into scrolling through the profile before swiping right and left than the average person. But I would say good pictures, good bio, fill out the prompt. And lastly, I would just say be authentic, right? Because the last thing you want to do is like waste anyone's time. I don't want to waste anyone's time. Just be authentic about who you are, what your interests are, and how you live your life. Like, you know, Dilmo has that question, are you physically active? And if a girl puts sometimes, or sometimes, that's not a deal breaker. If she puts often, that's a plus. But if a girl puts never, I don't care how she looks. I'll swipe left. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because I know I want to, I'm not saying I got to work out every day with my like girlfriend, wife, but like, yeah, it'd be cool to like do fun things together. Maybe hit the gym together once or twice a week, you know? So just like be authentic and depict who you are.
Yeah. With your honesty is important. I think with regard to the first two points that you mentioned about the photos and the bio. So it sounds like, you know, the common issues on dating apps are the same between men and women. Cause I remember when I was on the apps, those were my qualms with a lot of the profiles that were out there. But yeah, I think when it comes to photos, so we actually talked about this in episodes 12 and 13. But yeah, your photos should serve three purposes. One, it should give the other person a very clear understanding of what you physically look like in the present day. And I say present day because I've seen guys posting photos from 2012. And then two, you know, it's nice to have like a few different photos that provide a glimpse into what your hobbies and interests are. And in the same vein, that also creates like, you know, a conversation starter for the other person. But yeah, I remember like when I was on the apps, like if there's no description or bio and all of your photos look like you're in the car, you know, I'm not going to feel compelled to swipe right or whatever the favorable direction is.
Yep.
Okay. We're almost supposed to be at the hour point. Okay. So let's try to wrap things up. So I wanted to talk about gender norms because this is an interesting conversation that we've had before. So, you know, you're obviously successful, you're smart, and you've mentioned, well, I don't know if you mentioned in today's episode, but we've talked about this before. You're looking for an arrangement where there's more traditional gender roles. Like you want a wife who's, you know, willing to take on more traditional roles of being a wife and taking care of the kids and cooking and things like that. And it's, you know, it can be kind of a polarizing thing nowadays to say that like you are for these socialized gender norms or not or whatever. But let's talk about that. Like, tell us your thoughts. How do you think about gender roles in the relationship that you want?
Yeah, for sure. And look, part of this is based on my previous relationships and my experiences dating different women, right? But overall, like, let me preface by saying, like, in every relationship or in a vast majority of relationships, one person is going to be more masculine or dominant. I wouldn't say they have more power, but they're just more masculine. And in the vast majority of those instances, or I think stats show like in 80% of relationships, the male tends to be masculine, right? Whereas you could have relationships where the female is more masculine, right? So I know I'm like a masculine guy, right? And in general, masculine men are attracted to feminine women. All right, what does that mean to be a feminine woman? Mm-hmm. I mean, these type of women carry themselves in a certain way, right? I'm not saying they're not smart, they're not successful, but in general, I want to be kind of the provider, the caretaker of my future family, because I believe that's just my job, right? So assuming I'm doing my job, right, the finances are taken care of, you don't got to worry about food on the table, paying the bills, like I would prefer for my partner or wife, like, to want to spend more of her time and energy on like being the best wife and mom that she can be, right? Now look, if she wants to, like, if she, I know a lot of women spend a lot of time, money, and energy on their education and career these days. Like, if she wants to keep doing that, like, I have absolutely no problem with that. Mm-hmm. But I just want her to prioritize the family and being a wife and a mom before her career. Am I saying you can't multitask? No, that's not what I'm saying. But let's give an example. Like, you got a surgeon who just did like an 8-hour surgery or like a 16-hour shift at a hospital. And she comes home to like three kids ages 4 to 8, right? She comes home, you know, she's going to have some of those stresses from work. And, you know, is she going to be in a better capacity to like raise those kids? Or would it be a woman who works a 9-to-5 or a woman who's a housewife and didn't just have to, you know, deal with a patient dying in the OR for like 12 hours? You know, it's just like an example, mm-hmm. right? And I'm not saying men shouldn't help raise the kids, but in general, I'm just saying I want a woman who will let me, you know, do what I want to do and provide for the family. So she can, ideally she would want to mm-hmm. do, you know, focus on the family and maybe be a housewife, house mom, whatever you call it.
Okay. So, I mean, look, I think everyone is entitled to have an opinion and a preference. And honestly, if that's the arrangement you think will, you know, make you happy and that's kind of what you're looking for, and it's still rooted in a place of, you know, love and respect for each other, then, you know, I don't see any problem with that. I think just having those kinds of conversations before you get married, obviously, is super important. Hold on one second. I need to grab my laptop charger.
Yours.
So, yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that's what you prefer. I think where and when pushing gender norms becomes an issue within the context of relationships is like if my husband or significant other started to expect I do certain things because of the fact that I'm a woman and, you know, like started ordering me around to do those things. And I say that because I grew up in a household where that kind of rhetoric was common. Like, oh, you need to do the dishes because you're the girl. And I remember hearing that kind of stuff as a kid, and it would really get under my skin, you know? Or like if they started acting like they couldn't wash a dish because it's my duty, that I'm not okay with. But I think for me personally, you know, as well, When I think about my future, which includes a family, I think if the circumstances allowed for it and it was talked about and agreed to, I would be okay in an arrangement where I do more of prioritizing being a mom and being a wife and, you know, taking care of the household because my husband is the one who is financially providing for the family. Now, on that same note, so this is kind of going to be a tangent, but because I said that, I also have to say that I'm a huge advocate and believer that all women should have some functional knowledge around money and investing and, you know, a sense of like financial security and knowledge. And for me personally, you know, the idea of one day in the future not working my traditional 9-to-5 job so that I can focus more on being a wife and being a mom and, you know, working more on my passion projects, like that's something I wanted to do for a long time. And so I've been actively, you know, working to set myself up so that one day if I choose not to work, I still have money coming in. And if something happens to my husband, I have the financial resources of my own to survive and not just survive, but to thrive. And I think that is super important. And so I'm, again, just a huge advocate of women, irrespective of who the man in your life is, how much money he makes, how much he can support you. You need to have good functional knowledge around finances and investing and, you know, be financially secure so that you're not entirely reliant on another person. Okay, so back to my point about, you know, wanting to take care of the household, like I was saying, like I actually enjoy doing that kind of stuff. And I also appreciate, you know, certain things like when my significant other does
you know, chivalrous acts, whether it's opening the door or pulling out the chair or whatever. Like, those kinds of norms or elements are important to me. Like, I value that. And so I think to summarize where gender norms could be problematic in the context of relationships is if there's, you know, an expectation around certain responsibilities because of the gender that you're born with. And I think that, but I think that, like, if you have preferences or you want to abide by certain norms, certain gender norms, because that's what makes sense for your family and, you know, everyone's agreed to it, then agree to that, then, you know, by all means. But also, as another disclaimer, gender norms is like a really broad topic, and there's very extreme scenarios of gender norms that lead to long-term inequality, girls not being allowed to, you know, go to school and get an education because they're expected to learn how to care for the household. We're not talking about those situations. We're referring to scenarios where, you know, people who are in a relationship with each other are deciding on what kind of norms make sense for them under environments where everyone still feels valued and respected and can still, you know, have freedom and choice to pursue other opportunities if they wanted.
Yeah. And I also wasn't referring to cooking and cleaning at all. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, in my house, like, my dad actually does the cooking now and does most of the dishes. Like, I grew up doing dishes. So I just meant more like the mom and wife type of stuff. Like, you know, hopefully if I'm in a position, well, ideally if a woman's an amazing cook, that's always a plus, right?
Yeah.
But like in terms of cooking, cleaning, that's not really what I was going for when I meant I'm looking for like a more traditional arrangement. I just meant like a woman who wants to wants to be the best mom and wife she can mm-hmm. be and is going to prioritize that. Like, hopefully, you know, maybe I'll be in a spot where she doesn't have to do any cooking or cleaning. Maybe. We'll see. That would be the ideal scenario, right?
For sure. Okay, so last thing I want to talk about is social media. So you are someone who's pretty active on social media. You know, you definitely give off certain vibes. You're always traveling. There's lots of adventure happening. You're making money. You're super fit. And, you know, you've mentioned to me in the past how people who know you only through social media perceive you in a certain way. So talk to us about, you know, your general take on social media and then just what some of the misconceptions are that people have about you specifically based on what they see from social media.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll get into both of those. So I guess I'll start with, you know, in general, I'll just say with social media, like, you know, what you see of a person in their life is just, it couldn't be further from the truth. I'm not saying everything's not accurate, but it just doesn't give an accurate depiction of what they could be going through in their personal life or internally, right? So that's one thing I think I want to say. There's a lot of people have told me when they see me traveling, like, oh, you're living your dream life. Or let me give you an example. I was talking with one of my cousins recently about something I was going through, and she was like, it always amazes me when you text me these type of things, because if you never talked about it, I would never have guessed you go through these things too.
Yeah.
You know, because of just like the way she's like, oh, you travel all over the world. You're financially secure. You're in the best shape of your life. Like, no one would ever guess you go through these type of issues, whether, you know, anxiety or just getting over heartbreak, et cetera. Right. So you just never know what someone's going through based on what they portray. But yeah, in terms of me in particular, I sometimes find it surprising. Like, sometimes when I get to know a girl, she'll just tell me like, oh yeah, you're not what I expected. Like, you give off this vibe off social media, or like, oh, aunties can see your stories on Instagram, Facebook, especially if you're public. Oh yeah, I told this auntie I was hanging out with you, and she told me, she warned me about you. She told me not to hang out with you, right? So like, and all I really do is share my life on social media, which is, you know, everything, like the fitness, the travels. I used to, you know, share like the partying, even though it wasn't that frequent. But all of that is like, it helps people form an opinion of you as a person, right? Is one thing that I realized. And I think I kind of added fuel to the fire, especially what I realized is with Indian culture, like everyone's going to have an opinion of you, especially if you're living your life in a way that is different, right? But what I'll say is when I first started posting content in 2020, you know, I was just this fat, broke, pretty unhappy guy. And really my only intention was to share my journey as I tried to become the best version of myself, right? So unintentionally, what ended up happening was that started getting attention and like people will start commenting on your pictures or DMing you and you start attracting people into your life. Some of those people are positive influences. Some of those people are negative influences. And some of the women I've attracted into my life were probably women I shouldn't have allowed into my life. But to be honest, what ended up happening to me personally was like, I started wanting to share my success, the places I was going, and the things I was doing, right? It went from like wanting to do that with good intentions to wanting to craft this careful image of myself, because I knew what the power of that image, like the power of that image and the effect it has on people, especially with like women and dating, right? So a lot of what I posted ended up being to like, or there have been times where I've had to like look at my content and say, hey, why did you post that? Why did you post it the way you did? Why did you write that on your story? Right. And I know a lot of it was because I started getting feedback from society based on the content I was posting. And I, you kind of use that as a source of validation sometimes, especially when other things in my life weren't going according to plan. So it's just something I had to audit kind of over the last 2 years. And now when I try to post something, I just want to make sure it's coming from a good, healthy place and with the right intentions.
Yeah, I think, you know, it can be a great platform to share your successes and in your journey. And maybe that might inspire someone else. And that's great. But also when you're consuming social media, you know, it's so important to remember that one picture or one story gives you a 1 second glimpse into that person's life. And it's called a highlight reel for a reason. It's not a low light reel. You know, there's plenty of shit that happens in the backdrop that doesn't make it into these curated feeds.
Exactly.
Okay. So to wrap up, what parting words do you have for listeners?
So look, I mean, because a big chunk of this episode was just on dating and relationships, you know, I think one thing I've realized for myself and I've seen in other people is that a lot of people chase relationships and other people because they're looking for something external to like feel good about themselves or to feel whole and complete. And every time I've done that, it's just kind of led to more negative things happening in my life, right? Because at the end of the day, and this just comes a lot from like a lot of the personal development content I consume, is like when you chase something, it implies that you're lacking something, right? And when you're in a state of like scarcity and lack, I just really don't believe you can attract like all the best things you want in your life to you. So that's what I would say, is just like, you know, don't look for something outside of yourself for validation and happiness. And, you know, if you really want to attract, I think, the best people into your life, not just, you know, a significant other, I would say just like look in the mirror and say, hey, what can I do today to be the best version of myself? How can I improve as a person? And, you know, ask yourself, all right, at the end of this year, how do I want to look? How do I want to feel? What kind of person do I want to be? And just work every day to try to be that kind of person, right? And I think once you do that, you'll naturally, I think, attract the right kind of person. Put yourself in a position to meet that person at least, right?
Law of attraction.
Like I know if I, like just the fitness example, like I know if I looked the way I looked 3 years ago, not to say anything bad about these girls, but half of these women that I've gotten to know, spend time with, they probably wouldn't have been interested in me. And that's not a fault on their end. So, you know, I had to make the decision to lose 40 pounds and it paid off, right? Mm-hmm. So that's just one example. But
yeah. I think, you know, the best dating advice I heard was actually in church. I think it was like a guest speaker one day many years ago. And he said something like, don't focus so much on finding the one, rather focus on becoming the one. And I just thought that advice was so profound, and it really did shift my perspective on dating and kind of doing the things that I needed to do on myself, like working on myself in order to really start attracting the right people.
Yeah.
100%. Awesome. Well, Danny, thank you so much for being here on our show today. You shared a lot of really good gems and wisdom. How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, I think the best place these days is just my Instagram. That's just Danny_Matam, DANNY_MATAM. Any questions, anything you want to discuss further, you know, just shoot me a message and we can chat about it. Hopefully one day I'll get back into content creation and have an amazing platform like this to educate and inspire people like Julie.
Thanks, Danny.
All righty. I'll catch you later.